chapter 5, everything is still wonderful. Take a look on your sheet, please, where I have outline of chapter 5. It's going to be in the opening eight sentences are, as I said, all the promises are coming true. Everything is awesome. Shlomo's got everything and then some, and the nations are wowed by him, and it goes on to describe his wisdom and how his wisdom impresses the world. And then Shlomo is going to partner with King Hiram of Tzor to build the temple, to build the Beis HaMikdash. Moshe, I know you think the Pharaoh is involved somehow, but I still haven't found them in the text. And then Shlomo is going to get all the tribes to work to build the Beis HaMikdash, to build the temple. He's going to force labor from them, and yet no one's complaining. Really weird. The themes that we're going to see in this chapter, first of all, Hashem is smiling on Shlomo with wealth and wisdom. Shlomo finally doing what he was supposed to do, right? We've talked about how Shlomo was meant from the start to build the Beis HaMikdash, and it took him a long time to get started. Another major theme will be the relationship between Shlomo and King Hiram of Tzor. One thing that's particularly odd about that relationship, we're not going to get to it today, but I'm planting the seed, is Hiram is going to be the one to actually initiate construction of the Beis HaMikdash, not Shlomo. It's when Hiram reaches out that it happens. We have to think about that one. And are you forcing labor from the people to build the Beis HaMikdash, or are they on board? Neither of those will be answered today. But today, what we're doing here is seeing the opening part of the chapter, in which, as I said, Hashem is fulfilling promises. Just like in the previous chapter, the focus on wealth is not really about the wealth. It's more about how it reflects divine support. So one thing that we're going to see here is everything about Shlomo and his empire is large. They have large resources and they have large needs. And so we already saw the administration that oversees the empire. If you take a look on your sheet, it's source number 11. I brought you the Malbim from the start of our chapter. He says, Ushlomo hayat tzarich lahagdil shulchano mitzad godel malchuso v'ikar tiferes gedulaso. Shlomo needed to enlarge his table, because he had such a large empire, because there was so much splendor, because he's ruling over everybody else, right? Somebody asked me what we know about the wealth in Egypt or the wealth in Tzor. Shlomo is controlling them all. Shlomo's table grows along with the monarchy that he controls. As Abarbanel reads it, this passage here that we're about to read that describes all of Shlomo's greatness is an outgrowth of what we said about the Netzivim, these officers who bring food from around the land, the business of the local market and making sure that there's food available, that the prices stay low. If you take a look at source number 12, we needed to have that one officer who was over the land, because the Jews were so many and they were rejoicing in their success and they made meals, everybody celebrating sushi for everyone. So therefore you needed to appoint somebody over the food, like he talked about, that the prices don't go up. You also needed it because of the non-Jews who came to visit Shlomo. Since Shlomo reigned over everything, you had lots of people, foreigners, who were coming in to visit Shlomo. So you needed all of this. So in other words, what I'm trying to say is the party from the end of chapter 4 keeps right on going in chapter 5. And chapter 5 justifies what you're doing in chapter 4. Hand down, please. I've got a lot to say here. Chapter 5 justifies what's going on in chapter 4, which is why, look at the opening sentence of chapter 5. Ushlomo haya moshel b'chol ha-mamlachos. Shlomo reigned over all of these lands. Min hanahar eretz plishtim v'ad gevul Mitzrayim. From the river, the land of Plishtim. I'm going to have to talk about what that means, what this river is, what it has to do with the Plishtim. I'm going to come back to it. All the way to Egypt, Magishim Minchad, they're bringing gifts, Vodim Shlomo, and they're subservient to Shlomo, Kol Yemei Chayav, all his life. But you notice the opening word of the sentence. U Shlomo, and Shlomo, meaning it's following directly from chapter 4, which said that they were eating, they were drinking, they were happy. The two go hand in hand. They go together. These two, read it as though you're just going one chapter right into the next. So there's a lot to talk about within this section. There's a lot to say. I'm going to start on it. We're not going to finish it all today. I see your hand, Ricky, but really I want to get through some things first. If you look at sentence 1, chapter 5, sentence 1 that we just read, Shlomo is ruling over many nations who bring him gifts and they serve him and so on. Minahar Eretz Plishtim. From the river Eretz Plishtim. So the Targum, Yonatan ben Uziel, and Radak, in his commentary here, explain what this means. The river is the Euphrates. From the Euphrates, you're talking Syria into Iraq, right? That area. From the Euphrates all the way to the land of the Philistines. This is a major point. It is fulfillment of a prediction that Hashem made to Avraham. If you take a look at source number 13, Bayom Hahu, on that day, Karas Hashem es Avram bris le'mor, God made a covenant with Abram, saying, L'zarachan nasati es haaretz hazos, I've given your children this land, Minahar Mitzrayim, from the river of Egypt, which we usually assume to be the Nile, / Wadi Al-Arish, no, not Wadi Al-Arish is a Nahal. The Nahar is Nile, is the Nile. Ad HaNahar HaGadol Nahar Paras, all the way to the Euphrates, which was reiterated in the beginning of Yehoshua. Hashem said to Yehoshua, I'm going to give them, if they do what they're supposed to do, Mehamidbar v'halavanon hazev adanahar hagadol nahar paras, all the way to the Euphrates. That's the greater Israel vision that the world likes to point to. Hashem is going to give it to you in the event that you do what you're supposed to do, and Shlomo had it. This covenant was actually fulfilled, and they all bring presents. The world is bringing presents. If you take a look at source number 14, Malbim notes, V'gambazelo hayalam asayal ha'am. There isn't as great a burden for the nation. Ki kulam agishim mincha v'obdim et Shlomo. Because all of these nations are bringing gifts. They're all serving Shlomo. V'yidezeh yinaku Yisrael chalav ha'amim. Chalav ha'amim. Therefore, they're getting the milk of the nations. V'yigielam shefa min ha'aratzos hanichnaim tachtam. Could be chalav or chalav. You can read it either way. The point is, they are getting plenty from these lands, from the nations that are humbled before them. That's the idea. I'm going to pause for a moment. Questions? Yeah, Ricky.
Two things, Ken. First of all, how can Nahar Prat v'Chidekel be part of Plishtim? Plishtim were on the coast.
Right, it's Min HaNahar, from the river, to Eretz Plishtim.
The other one is a very strange comment. I was reading about Shulchan. In the Middle East, they don't use a Shulchan. They eat on carpets and things. So is this really a euphemistic Shulchan?
So the word Shulchan, not a euphemism. But it can be understood in a broader sense as not a literal table. Barbanel actually has a whole discussion which I didn't think we really needed to go through much. But it's gonna come up later in sentences 7 and 8. And there, when we get to it, I'll mention it from Barbanel. But table does not have to be literal. And yes, they did use tables. The fact that they didn't sit in the type of chair that you and I, you know, sit in, doesn't mean they're not using a table. It just means that they're either reclining on a couch or you know, whatever. But no, they did have tables. Moish, and then Sandra. Moish, you're muted.
All right. If you look at your geography, you're going to see that the states in the Bahrain, etc., which Israel made peace with last year, this is exactly where the Tigris and Euphrates merge.
Interesting. Thank you. Sandra.
So did David HaMelech, who conquered Mitzrayim and pushed him? Because I don't recall hearing that Shlomo did.
So Shlomo is not conquering anybody at this stage. We will see the question arise of whether Shlomo ever goes to war. That's going to come up. David did not conquer Egypt. David did not conquer the Plishtim, although he tried really hard. He did fight them quite a bit, and there were back and forths with the Plishtim. But what we're suggesting here, and you see it explicitly in the text, take the time to read it and you'll see it. The nations that surround them are awed by Shlomo. You're not winning them over by, you know, launching attacks on cities. You're not winning them over by sending in tanks. You're winning them over because they're just wowed by the brilliance of Shlomo. That's the biblical vision of it. It's not a war. We do not find Shlomo functioning as a general. David is a general. Shlomo's not a general. You follow?
Okay, so they just decided they wanted to be on good terms with Israel because Israel was so powerful.
Yes, because Shlomo is impressing them. That's really what it is. This is what the Torah predicted. Right? When you do what you're supposed to do, everything else is going to fall into place. That's what you're seeing here. Dahlia.
A lot of people think that, on the contrary, that they were vassals of Paro, and that's why he had to marry Paro's daughter and built her a big palace, and that was like the... Because that's what I learned when I learned it with Rabbi Moshe Shulman years ago. We also learned this. And mm-hmm. He saw a completely different point of view on this. He thought not that we're influencing Paro, but that the only way to make peace with Paro was to marry his daughter, pay him tribute, and build his daughter an Egyptian embassy.
So I know Rabbi Shulman, and I may reach out to him and tell him what you said, because the text doesn't support it. It is true that there are sources, and we said them when we talked about Shlomo's marriage to Paro's daughter, that that's a political marriage intended to cement an alliance. That part I don't disagree with. But we never find Shlomo send any gifts to Paro, and just the opposite, we will find Paro send gifts to Shlomo. If you jump ahead, I'm probably not going to find it because I'm not in those chapters anymore, but I looked at it a while ago, but I think it was in chapter 7, you find that Shlomo actually donates a city to, I'm sorry, Paro donates a city to Shlomo. It goes the other way. It's not Shlomo sending things to Paro, it's Paro sending things to Shlomo. So, I don't know, I might email Rabbi Shulman just to make sure that I understand what he was saying, but no, it's the other way around. Yes, it's a peace treaty, there's no question that it's a political marriage, but it's not a relationship of subservience. So just to do quickly the last couple of minutes that we have here, if you take a look at sentences 2 and 3, you find just how much grain and meat they need for Shlomo's table. Vayi lechem Shlomo liyom echad. Here's Shlomo's food for one day. Please keep in mind that when we say lechem, lechem does not necessarily mean bread. Often in Tanakh it means food. So food for one day. 30 kor of solet. Solet is fine flour. Shishim kor kemach. 60 kor of regular flour. Asara bakar biriim, 10 cattle that are described as biriim. Bari does not mean healthy in Tanakh. Bari tends to mean large. Remember, Rubenesque. Large equals healthy. So the biriim are understood by the commentators to be animals that are fed from the trough, as opposed to esrim bakar ri'i, 20 cattle that are ri'i. Ri'i means they graze wildly. Me'atzon 100 sheep, levad me'ayal utzvi v'yachmur, aside from all these other animals, which you will remember from the kosher lists in Shmini and Re'ei, ayal, utzvi, and yachmur, different types of antelope. Barburim avusim. So Radak brings you a whole bunch of explanations for barburim, including they are birds from the Berber areas, which we associate with Morocco and North Africa. But all of this is there. Abarbanel notes, we didn't mention anything about fruit and wine, right? This is some Mediterranean diet, right? No one said anything about the olive oil, no one said anything about the nuts. So Abarbanel says that's because that was sufficiently available locally. These are things, the grain and the meat, require that you bring them from elsewhere. That's why we're mentioning them. Because as you'll see, it continues to say in sentence four that that he's getting this because he controls Kol Eber HaNahar and so on. So that this stuff he has to bring from elsewhere, the rest he can get locally. There's much more to be said, so God willing, we will continue with this. Next time, we're going to see all this, including the wisdom of Shlomo. There's an awful lot to say, so tune in next week. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.